Pahalapa Giravarid Hari Gopi Janna Bahalapa Giravarid Hari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanacharya Yamuna Tira Vanacharya Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivraja Gachara Sotera Sadashri Shimu Divine Grace Hesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Founder Charya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda All glorious to Simul Devotees All glorious to Simul Devotees All glorious to Simul Devotees All glorious to Sri Guru and Garanga Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Sadhguru Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamani Namaste Sarasadarim Gauravani Pachani Nirvishesha Shanyavali Pashtachari Siddharani Jai Shri Prabhupada Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 15, The Pandavas Retire Timely, and we're doing text 22 through 24. So the main verse with a purport is 24. So I'll just read through the first two rather quickly, and we'll get to 24. Okay. So where are we? 22 and 23. I'll just read the English. O King, since you have asked me about our friends and relatives in the city of Dwarka, I will inform you that all of them were cursed by the Brahmins, and as a result, they all became intoxicated with wine, made of putrefied rice, and fought among themselves with sticks, not even recognizing one another. Now, all but four or five of them are dead and gone. So now he's delivering the bad news to Yudhishthira. Text. Okay, text 24. Okay. Prayenaitad Bhagavata Ishvarasya Vichestitam Mito Nignanti Bhutani Bhavayanti Chayanmita Prayenaitad Bhagavata Ishvarasya Vichestitam Mito Nignanti Bhutani Bhavayanti Chayanmita Prayenaitad Bhagavata Ishvarasya Vichestitam Mito Nignanti Bhutani Bhavayanti Chayanmita. Vaishnavis? Bhagavata, of the personality of Godhead, Ishvarasya, of the Lord, Vicheshtitam, by the will of, Mitta, one another, Nignanti, do kill, Bhutani, the living beings, Bhavayanti, as also protect, cha, also, yet, of whom, mitta, one another. Translation purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Factually, this is all due to the supreme will of the Lord, the personality of Godhead. Sometimes people kill one another, and at other times, they protect one another. Purport. According to the anthropologists, there's a nature's law of struggle for existence and survival of the fittest. But they do not know that behind the law of nature is the supreme direction of the supreme personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that the law of nature is executed under the direction of the Lord. Whenever, therefore, there is peace in the world, it must be known that it is due to the goodwill of the Lord. And whenever there is upheaval in the world, it is also due to the supreme will of the Lord. Not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. Whenever, therefore, there is disobedience of established rules enacted by the Lord, there is war between men and nations. The surest way to the path of peace, therefore, is dovetailing everything to the established rule of the Lord. The established rule is that whatever we do, whatever we eat, whatever we sacrifice, or whatever we give in charity, must be done to the full satisfaction of the Lord. No one should do anything, eat anything, sacrifice anything, or give anything in charity against the will of the Lord. Discretion is the better part of valor, and one must learn how to discriminate between actions which may be pleasing to the Lord and those which may not be pleasing to the Lord. An action is thus judged by the Lord's pleasure or displeasure. There's no room for personal whim. We must always be guided by the pleasure of the Lord. Such action is called Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam, for actions performed which are linked with the Supreme Lord. That is the art of doing things perfectly. Om Jnanatim Randisha Jnanjana Salakaya Chaksurunanitamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Vanchiko Patribhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyebhyascha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So I think this verse is a good illustration of why we must be careful in reading a single verse out of context or making assumptions about something without understanding the entire Siddhanta, the entire Vaishnava understanding of our philosophy. So here, because it says sometimes people kill one another, Sometimes people protect one another. It's all the will of the Lord. Now, of course, he is specifically talking about the fratricidal war between, you know, the Vrishnis. And it's true. It was the will of the Lord that they would all kill themselves, each other, and, of course, go back to Godhead and resume their eternal lila with Krishna. However, we should not think that this means that God is completely arbitrary. He's killing or saving people randomly. That there's not, you know, which one might interpret this, or that we have no personal responsibility. We say, well, everything going on is the will of the Lord. I killed that person, but it wasn't me. It was the will of the Lord. You know, anything that happens, you know. Or we could also interpret that since everything is under the direction of the Lord, that there's no free will for the living entity. That we are simply robots or actors in this play that Krishna is putting on. And there's something to that, but it's not the whole story. So it is true that Krishna is completely independent. He has complete control over the material and spiritual worlds. Ahang sarvasya prabhavo mataka sarvam pravartate. From the 10th chapter, Krishna says, I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. Everything emanates from me. So first of all, he's the creator of everything. So he is, naturally, because he's the creator, he is also the supreme controller. And it's described that even the powerful demigods must act according to his will. There's a few similar verses in the Vedic literatures and some of the Upanishads, but this one's from the Srimad Bhagavatam 3:29-40. Yad bhayad bhativato yam suryas tapati yad bhayad visharti devo bhagana bhati yad bhayat. Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the wind blows. Out of fear of him, the sun shines. Out of fear of him, the rain pours forth showers. And out of fear of him, the host of heavenly bodies shed their luster. So, obviously, this is describing that, you know, Krishna is completely in control of everything. Nothing can really happen without his sanction. And as Prabhupada quotes here in this purport, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. You know, I've heard that a lot, and I've always wondered what the source of it was. So I tried to look it up, and, you know, 90% of the, I guess you'd say, the search, whatever, you know, the hits you get, whatever they are, you know, come back to Prabhupada's books, and the others seem to all be from somewhere in the Vedas. I always thought this was a Christian saying, but I don't know if somebody knows. Apparently it's a Vedic aphorism, or, you know, it's a Vedic mantra of some type. Not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord. I think it always just has, it has a nice poetry to it, doesn't it, though? And it really gives you a feeling of God's omnipotence, of God's complete control as the supreme controller of everything. So, of course, ultimately, as being described in this verse, it is true. Ultimately, life and death is dependent on Krishna. We also hear a lot, Rakhi Krishna Mari Ki, Mari Krishna Rakhi Ki. If Krishna protects one, no one can kill. And if Krishna wants to kill, no one can save. But again, this doesn't mean that God is some, you know, somebody who is just arbitrarily, whimsically saying, you'll die and you'll live, and, you know, manipulating things like that. Because then actually you see about halfway through the purport, Prabhupada shifts a little bit. And that shift is when he starts to clarify, and he says, whenever therefore there is peace in the world, snow would be due to the goodwill of the Lord. And then he says, whenever therefore there's disobedience to the established rules, there's war between men and nations. So in other words, it's not arbitrary. It's not just, hey, Krishna decides, I'd like to have a war. No, there's disobedience to the laws of God, to the laws of nature, and there's karmic reaction. So that's important to understand, like I said, the whole context to understand the entire philosophy. So Prabhupada explained that killing or wars come about from disobedience to the rules enacted by God. Krishna's will usually works within a set of rules or principles. It's not chaotic. We see that there's order to the universe. We see that there's natural laws. There's laws of karma. There's rules of dharma. So, in other words, there is a system. There's a certain, you know, obviously a greater intelligence and order to the world. Now, of course, Krishna can always act independently. He is the supremely Svarat. He is independent, and since he creates the rules, he could change the rules, and sometimes he does. An example might be if the parents or the father and mother decide, they have a rule for the family, kids. You know, Saturday morning, we all have to clean the house. Then you can do what you want for the weekend. Okay, that's the rule. So one Saturday, they say, oh, we're going on a trip today. And so all the kids say, no, we have to clean the house. That's the rule. Would any kids say that? No. But anyway, in other words, no, the parents made the rule, so the parents can change the rule. You know, so that's kind of like, you know, so Krishna has that prerogative, we could say. But yet there is a certain predictability, because Krishna, after all, is the author of all moral and religious principles. And these are found throughout the Vedas, throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Upanishads, Puranas, Mahabharata, filled with religious principles, filled with all sorts of rules and regulations for the spiritual benefit of mankind. It's a dharmantu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. The real religious principles are enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yamaraj says this in the sixth canto, third chapter. So what is a real religious principle? It's something that is enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is his will, and there are religious principles. So here we have to kind of balance the idea of Krishna's absolute control with our own responsibility and freedom, because that's there as well. And that, of course, brings about sometimes an interesting discussion of the philosophical concept of free will versus determinism. And that's something that is certainly covered and understood. I would say that many religions and philosophies don't have quite the clarity, not to be critical, but sometimes you don't find quite this clarity that you do in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. You know, for instance, many years ago, there was a famous book by a rabbi that said, why do bad things happen to good people? And they couldn't really explain it, you know. And only devotees can really explain these things, that we have a certain amount of free will. Things are not absolutely arbitrary. But if you don't understand action, reaction, karma, reincarnation, you don't understand the minute free will and independence of a living entity, these things can become bewildering. So when Lord Chaitanya begins his instructions to Sanatana Goswami, after Sanatana Goswami says, everyone says I'm a learned man, but actually he says, I don't know anything because I don't know who I am. And isn't that the most important question? I mean, when it comes down to it, who am I? You know, what is my nature? What am I doing here? What is the purpose of life? This is what an intelligent, philosophically inclined person asks. Whether they articulate it clearly like Sanatana Goswami would, or whether it's just, you know, something in the back of their mind, people want to find out these things. So Lord Chaitanya immediately begins his instructions, Jivara Sarupaya, Krishnara Nichidas, Krishna Tatishta Shakti Beta Beta Prakash. The living entity's constitutional position is to be an eternal servant of Krishna, because he's the marginal energy of Krishna and a manifestation simultaneously one with and different from the Lord, like a molecular particle of sunshine or fire. I think Krishna has three varieties of energy. So the first instruction of Lord Chaitanya, the first verse, kind of covers so much of Krishna conscious philosophy right there, explaining the position that we are all eternal servants of Krishna. We're marginal energy, and we're simultaneously one with and different from the Lord. So this Achintaveda philosophy is very, very important, and it's actually very, very deep. And the more you analyze things and study, you'll see that the concept of Achintaveda Tattva underlines so many other things in our philosophy and helps them to become understood. Just like the position of living entity, we're simultaneously one with and different. We're one with in that we have similar qualities of Krishna. We are different in that Krishna is very great, we are very small. Our powers, our abilities are very limited compared to the Supreme Lord. It's also described that the jiva, Krishna Tatishta Shakti, is Tatishta. Tatishta Shakti means marginal. And why is it marginal? Because sometimes we may be covered by Maya, and sometimes we may be liberated or may be in full Krishna consciousness. So that's the nature of the jiva, that he has a tendency to become covered again, does not have full power, full knowledge, all everything that Krishna has. So then, of course, what happens to the living entity? Lord Chaitanya explains, forgetting Krishna, the living entity has been attracted by the external feature from time immemorial. Therefore, the illusory energy gives him all kinds of misery in this material existence. So, why is he now attracted to the material energy? In other words, why don't we just simply stay with Krishna, be in the spiritual world, have loving relationships with him? After all, 3/4 of all living entities, it describes, are in the spiritual world and never leave. And there's a quarter of us who were, you know, like the bad kids, you know, came to this material world. Why is that? It comes down, again, free will. We have some choice. There's always choice for the living entity. There's a nice explanation that Prabhupada gives on this point, a really nice purport. This is 15.7 of Bhagavad Gita, Mamaye Vangcho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Mana Sishtani Indrani Prakriti Stani Karshati. The living entities in this conditional world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the 6 senses, which include the mind. So Prabhupada says, the separate expansions, the living entities, are eternally servitors. That we established before, Lord Chaitanya says. The personal expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the individual identities of the Godhead, are always present. In other words, never was there time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. You know, it's already earlier described in the second chapter that the eternal identity of both Krishna and the living entities is there, always existing. Similarly, the separated expansions have their identity. As fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, the living entities are also fragmental portions of his qualities. Again, we have similar qualities, different quantity. Then Prabhupada says, one of those qualities is independence. Right? Every living entity as an individual soul has his personal individuality and a minute form of independence. So every one of us is eternally an individual. Every one of us has a little bit of independence. By misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul, and by proper use of independence, he is always liberated. In either case, he's qualitatively eternal, as the Supreme Lord is. In his liberated state, he is freed from material condition under the engagement of transcendental service unto the Lord. In his conditioned life, he is dominated by the material modes of nature, and he forgets the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As a result, Karshati has to struggle hard in its existence in this material world. So once we come to the material world, going back to the idea of free will, we are called conditioned. And free will is largely suspended. Primarily, Prabhupada says that we are dominated by the modes of nature, by the laws of karma, by natural laws. In the material world, people think that they are free, they're independent, they can do whatever they want, but not really. We're under Maya's control. People are under the control of the material modes of nature, whether it's goodness, passion, ignorance, and the 81 combinations, whatever that there are, of the mixing of these modes. It can seem very complex, and people often think, because their minds are very active, that I have all of this free will and control, and because I can think all these different things. But how much can we control? You know, well, not so much when it comes right down to it. So the real freedom, as being pointed out, is becoming free from material desires and free from the influences of the modes of nature. That's real freedom for the living entity, because then one resumes one's real nature as eternal servant of Krishna, part and parcel. Prabhupada says, 3.13.39, one who engages in devotional service to the Lord according to regular principles is automatically free from material desires. In that pure state of mind, one can realize the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada sometimes referred to the regular principles as the regulative principles of freedom. You know, it might seem a little bit odd. You know, you Hare Krishnas have all these restrictions. You can't do all these things. Why do you call those freedom? Well, it's because those things help to free us from material energy. They help to free us from the bonds of this material world, the modes of nature, and free us from the cycle of birth and death. Now, the regular principles in themselves don't do that, but they provide the framework, they provide the groundwork, place one in the mode of goodness, so then one can take up devotional service. Then it's the process of bhakti, of course, that actually liberates us and brings us back to the lotus feet of Krishna as his eternal servant. So only the devotee who has actually surrendered to Krishna experiences freedom from suffering in the material world. And it's even described in the six symptoms of surrender that relief from the miseries of the material world is one of the things that's experienced by the devotee. I mean, that's a whole other discussion. Why do we still sometimes feel suffering? I've covered that a few times in classes. We won't go there. But basically, we are free from the suffering of birth and death, of identification with the body and everything that's entailed with that. Anybody who's my age, think how we would feel if I really thought I was my body. You know, nice, isn't it, that we're not? It's for me. Okay. So we do experience the freedom from the suffering of the material world because our consciousness has changed. Because the consciousness has changed from identification with the body, both gross and subtle, also the mind, intelligence, to identification with ourselves as Jivara Srupaya Krishna Nichidas, eternal servants of Krishna. Now, once we accept that and we surrender to Krishna, and people don't like that word either, surrendering, but we surrender, not we are not robots. The free will is always there. As we are parts of God, parts of the Supreme Independent, we have, as Prabhupada said, we have that minute independence. We're eternal servants, but we always have free will, we have volition, and self-interest. Now it's interesting, a pure devotee, someone who's completely surrendered to the Lord, still has self-interest. Because Jiva Goswami points out in Paramatma Sandarbha that self-interest is an eternal quality of the Jiva. The Jiva has volition, has free will, has self-interest, is a doer, has the ability to act, the ability to make choice. Jiva Goswami points out these things are all constitutional, inherent in our real nature. Then it's a question of how we utilize these things. Do we utilize these things correctly to serve God, to love God, or incorrectly to try to be separate from God in this material world? Self-interest, described in 5.6.19, talking about the story of Lord Vrishabhadeva. The verse is, those who unnecessarily engage in bodily conception and create an atmosphere of materialism are always ignorant of their real self-interest. Out of his causeless mercy, Lord Vrishabhadeva taught the self's real identity and the goal of life. So to know one's real self-interest, to know the goal of life and one's real identity, very important. Prabhupada says in the purport, satisfaction through self-realization is called svarupananda. The conditioned soul eternally sleeping in darkness does not understand his self-interest. He simply tries to become happy by making material adjustments, but this is impossible. It is therefore said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tatevadu Svarta Gatemi Vishnum. Due to gross ignorance, the conditioned soul does not know his real self-interest, and that is to take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So we do have self-interest, but there's a real self-interest. There's the false self-interest we have of how much can I enjoy this material body, how much sense gratification, how much money can I get, how much can I do this, and the other thing. And then there's the true self-interest of the soul, which is described here. Nitevadu Sarta Gatami Vishnum. Real self-interest is taking shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So then we experience this freedom from material realization, from material energy, and we experience, Prabhupada said, realization of Krishna. So that's our goal, and that's what we should be striving to do. And then, about the last third of the purport, Prabhupada begins to describe how we experience that freedom from material energy and that realization of Krishna. In the purport today, Prabhupada said, The established rule is that whatever we do, whatever we eat, whatever we sacrifice, or whatever we give in charity must be done to the full satisfaction of Krishna, of the Lord. No one should do anything, eat anything, sacrifice anything, or give anything in charity against the will of the Lord. And of course, most of us recognize that verse, yat karoshi, yat ashnasi, yat jahosi, yat ashi, yat tapasyasi kuntaya tad kurushva manarpanam, 927. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, whatever austerities you perform, do that, O Son of Kunti, as an offering to me. So Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say we should mold our life in such a way that we are 24 hours a day serving Krishna. That's something you probably heard several times in classes and like that from Prabhupada. You know, in other words, work out your life in a way to do this so that you're serving Krishna. It's not going to just happen by itself. You know, I'm going to just wake up one day and I'm going to be serving Krishna 24 hours a day when yesterday I was serving my senses 24 hours a day. And it can become somewhat difficult and daunting even for a neophyte devotee such as ourselves. How am I going to serve Krishna 24 hours a day, think of Krishna 24 hours a day? Not so easy. Therefore, Krishna establishes processes for the conditioned soul to do this. We have regulated religious principles. We have so many ways that Krishna set up for the gradual advancement of the living entity, established the process of Varnashram, which brings everybody into sort of, you know, the order of religious life. There's many ways to make offerings to them. Even in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, where Krishna says, you know, surrender to me completely, devotional service, if you can't do this, do that, if you can't do that. And he kind of goes down the line, gives us five or six options, really, that if you can't do pure devotional service, well, at least do this. At least use your intelligence. At least offer something. At least do some positive work, you know. In other words, so you can gradually make advancement step by step. And in Bhagavad Gita 3.10, verses, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu and blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this yajna, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So there's a point, there's a purpose of being in this material world. And that point is, of course, to get out of this material world. So Prabhupada sums it up in the purport. He says, Prabhupada created this material world to enable the conditioned souls to learn how to perform yajna for the satisfaction of Vishnu. So while in the material world, they can live very comfortably without anxiety. And after finishing the present material body, they can enter into the kingdom of God. I love this next sentence that Prabhupada concludes with. That is the whole program for the conditioned soul. So there it is. There's our two sentences. There's our plan. Live happily according to religious principles, serving Krishna in this world, and next world, next lifetime, go back home, back to Godhead, and serve Krishna eternally in the spiritual world. That's our program. And that's the program that Prabhupada presented and we present to everybody. Sounds simple, but very difficult sometimes for people to apply. So for a devotee, we're not concerned with the different gradual processes. We're not concerned with different modes of nature and worshiping demigods or doing karmic activity or whatever. We're interested in the process of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti is our process by which we begin to develop this attraction, this attachment to Krishna. And we do it by serving Krishna, working for him, offering the fruits to him, and of course, the regular principles of hearing and chanting regularly. So rather than artificially renouncing everything, we use it in his service. And that's, of course, called Yukta Vairagya. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami, very famous verse on Yukta Vairagya, and Prabhupada's translation of that is, Rupa Goswami says that as long as we are in this material world, we have to act. We cannot cease acting. Therefore, if actions are performed and the fruits are given to Krishna, that is called Yukta Vairagya. So this is real renunciation of the material world, utilizing everything favorably in Krishna's service. And accepting, a couple of the principles are accepting things favorable in devotional service and rejection of unfavorable things. It's mentioned in Hari Bhakta Vilas, quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, anakulyasya sankopa pratikulyasya varjana. Accept those things favorable, reject those things unfavorable. And that might be different for every person. Of course, there's certain things we know, the four wicked principles. Those are things that are favorable to do and unfavorable to break them. So, in other words, some things are there that are established, and some things maybe have to do with our particular life or particular situation, what's favorable to our Krishna consciousness. And that's really a good way to judge things as far as decisions we might have to make in life. Is this favorable for my Krishna consciousness? Or at least is it not unfavorable? At least can I, you know, make sure that it's not an unfavorable distraction, and how can I turn it into a favorable situation, you know? And conversely, anything done without connection to Krishna is of no value. Bhagavatam 1.2.8, the occupational activities of a man performed according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. So that's our principle. Do these things help us to remember Krishna, to help us to serve Krishna and engage in devotional service? Now, in this purport, Prabhupada also mentions this process. He mentions the word dovetailing. Well, I can't find it, but here, anyway, somehow he says we need to. Okay. It's there. I can't find it. Anyway, Prabhupada says we establish this idea of dovetailing. Dovetailing is, I think, a very interesting. Prabhupada used this a lot. He talked about dovetailing in Krishna consciousness. It's sort of like it's our system for how we do things, how we live life, how we might be a householder, we might have to have a job, business, we may have so many different activities, we might have children, we might, all these things, you know, we have obligations. So dovetailing was the answer. And of course, the original meaning of dovetailing, most of you know probably, it's a joint, a woodworking joint. It's when you put two things together, it's called a dovetail joint. It's kind of flares out, that's why it's called a dovetail, and one fits interlocking into the other. So it's considered to be one of the strongest joints, one of the strongest. I was just thinking that I've got this old dresser that I use. I picked up somewhere cheap at a flea market or something, but it's actually really nice. It's from like 1880s or something like that. And it has these dovetail joints, and those drawers held together perfectly for 150 years or 140 years. What is it? Oh, what does this say? I can't read it. Dovetailing everything to the established will of the Lord. Right, so now the word has come to mean in common usage, you know, beyond the woodworking joint, to mean to connect or to combine something precisely or harmoniously. That's the dictionary definition. So that's what we do. This is Prabhupada saying. We combine our natural propensities, Prabhupada sometimes calls them capacities, our abilities for Krishna's service. Now, Prabhupada always say that. In the beginning, whatever you do, do it for Krishna. What do you like to do? Do it for Krishna. What are your abilities? What are your skills? You know, whatever it is. You know, and we see this time after time when Prabhupada would talk to a devotee or a new person or meet them. He never said, you know, give up everything you're doing, move into the ashram, and, you know, no, he would say, do what you're doing for Krishna. Remember, he actually became an initiated devotee. He was a professor of economics at somewhere in Washington, D.C. He came to see Prabhupada and one of the darshans, and Prabhupada said, oh, well, you should write about, you know, economic systems and how Krishna consciousness is Vedic system, perfect economic system, and like that. So in other words, you know, he didn't tell him, do something totally different. He said, whatever you're doing, do it for Krishna. And it's not always just a matter of, well, that's nice to engage someone in the beginning. Sometimes it's like, think about Sarup Damodar Maharaj, who was a doctoral student, wasn't he, in chemistry? And, you know, when he came to Krishna consciousness, and Prabhupada encouraged him to do that, and then they formed the Bhaktivinoda Institute, and you know, so much wonderful preaching came out of that because of encouraging him to engage in his capacities and his propensities, which is what we should all do. So we want to bring our desires and actions, everything in alignment with Krishna. And it's not always immediate. But our service and our sadhana brings us increasingly more and more into that alignment. And that's kind of, we sort of see how much we're advancing. How much our material and the spiritual lives are separate, or how much they are aligned, how much they are dovetailed. In other words, the more that these things are not different, you know, then the better. Because we all have many other duties in the material world. Prabhupada discusses this, I've read this one before, I know, but I think this is a really great purport. Because Prabhupada talks about conditional and constitutional activities. He says, when a living entity is conditioned, he has two kinds of activities. One is conditional, and the other is constitutional. For protecting the body or abiding by the rules of society and state, certainly there are different activities, even for devotees, in connection with conditioned life. And such activities are called conditional. Besides these, the living entity who is fully conscious of the spiritual nature and is engaged in Krishna consciousness or devotional service to the Lord has activities which are called transcendental, performed in his constitutional position. Okay? Makes sense, right? We have constitutional activities, which is part of our spiritual nature, our inherent original sarup, and we have our conditioned activities that we have to do while we're in this material world. Then Prabhupada says, now in the conditioned state, sometimes devotional service and the conditional service in relation to the body will parallel one another. But then again, sometimes these activities are opposed to one another. As far as possible, a devotee is very cautious. He does not do anything that could disrupt his wholesome condition. So in other words, we want to try to bring constitutional and conditional activities as much in parallel as possible, Srila Prabhupada is saying. And then, of course, we begin to establish our religion, original relationship with Krishna, and start acting more and more, increasingly as we make advancement in our constitutional position. Now, of course, in the early stages, we often don't perceive our relationship with Krishna so much directly, but we do have spiritual relations with devotees. And often, for many devotees, that was our first connection. We met devotees, we, you know, went to the temple, you know, many of us didn't meet Srila Prabhupada for many months after we became devotees, maybe years, or maybe not at all. I know Prabhupada disciples who never saw Srila Prabhupada, you know. But the devotees represented Prabhupada, and they represented the philosophy. Maybe not perfectly, but good enough, you know. We got the job done somehow, you know, because everyone was focused on Prabhupada, giving Prabhupada's books, trying to explain the philosophy in the way that we had heard it from Prabhupada the best we could. And therefore it was effective, because he was in line with the guru, he was in line with Lord Chaitanya, his spiritual master, the acharyas, all the way back to Krishna. And of course, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore there's potency in that. So sadhu sangha, very, very important. Devotee relationships are spiritual in essence as long as Krishna's in the center. And of course they're material to the degree we're influenced by karma jnana, which usually means material desires, need for enjoyment. So our primary purpose is to reestablish our loving relationship with Krishna in our constitutional position. But we also remember that Krishna is never alone. He's always exchanging with all kinds of devotees. And we also exchange love with devotees. And sometimes when you read some of the pastimes in Goloka, Gokula, often the associates of Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Bhagavat and in Chaitanya Charitamrita, see that these wonderful close relationships, right? They're always hugging and loving and crying, and right? I mean, you know, it's like, it's not some, you know, sterile thing, like we're all just standing next to each other, I don't even know you, I'm just focused here on Krishna. No, of course not. That's impersonal. You know, we're persons, Krishna's a person, we're all independent, we're persons from time immemorial. So naturally, there's a relationship. I was reading the other day, and Shivaram Swami's written a series of books on Krishna and Vrindavan, which I think are really nice, they're really sweet. You know, and this one, first one's called the Venu Gita. He cites Ujjvala Nilamani by Rupa Goswami. He says the gopis have different moods, different orientations, and there are different groups called yutas and subgroups called ganas. And they're people of kind of like nature, and they get together and they talk amongst themselves, and you know, they're embracing, they're talking confidentially, they're expressing love, affection, you know, all sorts of wonderful relationships with one another, but Krishna's always the center, right? So that may be the difference between my relationships with my friends or my family. In other words, for the residents in Vrindavan, Krishna is the center. So, but in the spiritual world, devotees have variety, they have personality. They have a personal relationship with Krishna and with each other. And each one of those is somewhat unique. Okay? So while in the material world, the relationship should be spiritualized. Just as there's affection in families due to common parents, we are all part of Krishna's family. So there's a natural affection for all of our God brothers, sisters, nephews, nieces, cousins, whatever. So devotees experience spiritual safety. He's experienced satisfaction in devotee relationships. Often those relationships are based on shared service. And we've all experienced that. You ever remember somebody that you did some service with 30, 40 years ago and you haven't seen them forever and you think, gee, it's like you felt you were really close to them, but you know, maybe you haven't seen them for a long time, but if you saw them again, you know, you would feel that because you shared service together. And some of the devotees that I had this, you know, relationships with service, they're not people I would have picked as my best friends necessarily. Some of them I didn't even like very much. I shouldn't say that. But you know, in other words, our material personalities may or may not mesh, but when we're serving together, it's very different. And you know, and we have that experience, and it's a closeness and something to remember, right? I mean, here I'm seeing at least three devotees I served with in Miami in the room, maybe more, I don't know. But you know, and it's a right? Longer you were in Miami, right? Yeah, and of course, the two late. So it's like, you have some experience with them. You feel that, you know, something you remember. The service that you shared together. And it brings us closer together. You know, and it's not material. You know? So, this is what we want. We want to make that more and more the center of our lives. I was thinking, running a little late here, sorry. One last example. I was in Hawaii a few years ago. I had a couple years there where somehow or another I ended up being GVC in Hawaii, and that was a real sacrifice. Everybody felt real bad for me that I had to go to Hawaii, you know, twice a year. But, you know, it was January. And anyway, long story short. One day, Govindadasi came over to the temple, and Shudhakirti was there, and we went up to Prabhupada's room, you know, Prabhupada's quarters are really nice there in Hawaii. And when you've got Shudhakirti and Govindadasi in one room, what are you going to do? You're going to pump them for every story about Prabhupada, right? So we were like 3 hours there, you know, just talking about Prabhupada, mostly them, and I just kind of kept asking questions about Prabhupada and all their experiences with Prabhupada. And it was wonderful. And I was just thinking what a nice experience it was because it was centered around Prabhupada. You know, it wasn't, I mean, Shudhakirti and I are good friends, but I mean, it's not like it was because we were such good friends that it was somehow an enjoyable, a fun thing to do. It was because Prabhupada was the center. So that's what we're striving for, to link all of our actions and desires on Krishna. Srila Prabhupada says, and this, he sums it up at the end of this purport, he says, such action is called Yoga Karmasu Koshalam. And that's actually from the Bhagavad Gita 250, and Prabhupada translates that in Bhagavad Gita as the art of work, the art of all work, Prabhupada says. This yoga karmasu koshalam. Bhakti yoga is the art of self-realization. So this is the art. Interesting, Prabhupada sometimes describes Krishna consciousness as a science, sometimes as an art. It's all these things. It's unlimited. But there is an art. You know, and the spiritual master's expert, Prabhupada's expert, presenting this to us, engaging all of our activities, our propensities, dovetailing these in service of Krishna to more and more make advancement and become more attached to Krishna, and hopefully give up more and more of that attraction to the material energy. Okay? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you all. Any comments, questions? No? Oh, Shri.
Thank you for your nice class. That was a really nice point that you had said about, I guess, Jiva Goswami said about the self-interest, that it's an actual inherent quality of every jiva. That was a really nice point. I was wondering, like, the jivas that come to the material world, so do they, like, think that that is their self-interest, and then the ones that don't come, they understand that worshipping Krishna is their self-interest? Do they somehow, like, make a mistake in that idea?
I think that's one of the mysteries. Why did some of the living entities understand their real self-interest and stay in the spiritual world serving Krishna, and why did some of us leave thinking that our self-interest would be trying to enjoy separately in this material world? I don't know if I really have a good answer to that, to why it happened. We do know that it happened because here we are, and you know, and trying to reestablish our relationship with Krishna. But yeah, but once we come here, what's the first contact with a living entity when he comes into the material world? False ego. You know, we start with the most subtle elements. So we start with false ego. And false ego means identification with the body, gross and subtle body, forgetting that. Otherwise, we couldn't do it. Why would we come here if we keep thinking, oh, I'm really a servant of Krishna, I'm not supposed to be here. No, we have to become covered, so then we identify with, this is my home, this is where I'm supposed to be, where I'm supposed to find enjoyment. And then we struggle for lifetimes trying to find that enjoyment that we thought we'd get with no success. Yeah, but why? Why did some of us not understand our self-interest? Good question. If somebody has the answer, I'm... It's a big discussion, yeah. It's a very deep discussion. Pran Govinda, do you?
When you mentioned that four rags of regulative principles gives freedom, but we are consciously aware how it gives freedom. Mm-hmm. If somebody who is attached or addicted to the sense gratification, for them it doesn't make any sense. They want to go, they rather think, why God doesn't give me more sense gratification, I could be better off. But because they are not educated spiritually, they think, they may not agree that four regulative principle actually gives freedom. So in order to actually see it, we have to be educated, or everybody has to be educated. That's how I see it. Otherwise, it's like people are interested. That's what they're doing against four regulative principles.
Yeah, educated, and also, but you know, Prabhupada, there's three kinds of ways people learn. Some people some people learn by hearing. That's the one who's educated, who hears it and knows. Some people have to experience themselves. And some people, even after experiencing, don't learn.
Yes.
So sometimes people have to experience that. You know, like they say, sometimes people who are drug addicts, they don't, until you kind of, like they say, reach rock bottom, you know, until just your life is so miserable, it's just so horrible, you finally say, this is not worth anything, I think I'm getting any kind of enjoyment, and they'll quit. So it's kind of like that. You know, it's like we had to sort of hit rock bottom and realize that this, you know, material world is causing us more suffering than happiness, and real happiness is in our spiritual life. You know, sometimes it takes that experience. Sometimes if we're fortunate, you know, we're able to hear and understand. And that ability to hear and understand and have faith, a lot of it's dependent upon agyata sukriti, you know, not pious activity, but devotional activity, sort of from the mercy of the devotees, the Vaishnavas in the past, or things like that. Yeah, that's another big discussion.
Yeah,
how the living entity gets the mercy to go. Yeah.
Also, I was in chapter 8, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Jadgatta na nivartante tad dhamma paramamama. Once you come to me, you never go back.
Mm-hmm.
So then the logic can be put that some people will say, well, that means we are never actually there, we are at the border, tatastha, the marginal.
Yeah.
So there is a one group there. Pounding on that.
Right.
But then it says maybe Because Prabhupada also did say in Adivila chapter 4, Sarvata dhamsa rahita sattapi dhamsa karani. Even if there is ample reasons to break the relationship, love for the Lord, it is impossible. Mm-hmm. So that means that awakened, full-fledged love was not there. Somebody will come up with that. Mm-hmm. Because Prabhupada did put that sloka also there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like a kind of a...
Yeah, there's that tearing, is there? That's that tatashta, you know, that we're that marginal, where we can be, where, you know, we can influence one or the other, way or the other. And that can be a struggle.
That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jaiva Dharma, he says, the marginal means we have a free choice. Those who looked at misuse the free will, the misuse of free will already built in free will. It's not is not necessarily not there. It is there.
Yeah.
So those who looked at illusory energy, they got some attraction, allured by illusion. That's why the out of compassion, the false ego appear to allow them, okay, you want to explore and go for it. So they went, and here I am.
Yeah. Two quick points, and I got to end here. I was just going to say that in terms of the Bhagavad Gita saying that, you know, once we return, we'll never come back again. Yeah, someone asked Prabhupada, I remember this, some conversation, and Prabhupada said, they said, well, could you possibly come back? And Prabhupada said, you could if you wanted to, he says, but you won't. In other words, yes, Krishna guarantees. In other words, you've learned. You've had the experience, you've learned. You're not going to go come back to this material world after getting out. And secondly, what was the other point?
So are you saying it's intentional also?
Was it intentional? I was just going to say, it's hard to say, because intention is a hard thing to judge, because we have mixed intention, you know, at this point in our Krishna consciousness. I always take shelter in something that Vishwanatha Chakravarti, of course, said that for a devotee, he said, even a devotee who is having difficulty or whatever, it's in one of those verses, they said, our intention to be Krishna conscious is stronger than our intention for Maya. And he says, that's kind of a definition of a devotee. Even if we still have a material desire, you know, we have more desire to go back to Krishna than we do to disenjoy material life. So as long as it's a little bit more, we're going to keep moving forward. Okay.
Prabhu, there's one online question, if you have time.
Okay.
It's from G.A. I don't know who that is.
Oh, G.A.
Mm. Can even activities deemed ugra karma be dovetailed, or does Krishna draw the line? If I am a scientist involved in cloning or an abortion doctor, would I have to switch jobs before Krishna accepted me?
Might be a good idea. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to dovetail everything. Although, you know, in the chapter about, when they say that Krishna's the taste in water, Prabhupada did say in one lecture, he says if the drunk thinks alcohol, this Krishna's in the taste of alcohol, he says, he makes some advancement. But I wouldn't recommend that as a, you know, effective process for advancement. You know, so I guess that's the only way that you could possibly dovetail ugra karma would be if you somehow saw Krishna in it. But no, that's why we have the regular principles as a starting point. I mean, there's certain things that are just going to, you know, they're going to be working against, it's like throwing the anchor off the end of the boat and then rowing in, you're not going to get anywhere. Yeah, and I've seen that a lot of times. Most time devotees do, if they're in that kind of situation. If you don't know that understanding, what can be done? You just try to engage the person. But once the understanding is there, yeah, you shouldn't continue if at all possible. Yeah. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.